Yes, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Jack Farmer. I'm coming to you live from the world famous Elite of the Week studios in sunny Los Angeles, California. And have we got a show for you? We've got two teams with six men total. We've got three teams with six men total. And we even have the best man with a butler of his own. But before we get into all the flim-flam hijinks and shenanigans this show is known for, allow me to introduce to you to the man who doesn't need a metal mask and a green cloak to spell doom for all those who disagree with him. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Flobo, boys.
There is no Flobo. There is only doom. What up? It's Elite of the Week, my man, Jack Farmer, looking nice, svelte, trim, and well-dressed as always. So glad to be part of the show.
Well, you know, we have that new segment. It's all about being dressed well, and this week had a lot of people dressed really well, so I had to make sure I lived up to all the hype. I have to say, though, I've done a bad job of keeping track of just what characters I've related you to, and I'm worried I'm going to start going over and redoing some. I need to start keeping track. I
feel any like all praise is great.
I've done a pretty good job, I think, of not repeating any, but I think I might have to start repeating soon.
I know you have a ton of Excel spreadsheets. One less is okay.
I've not written any of these down, so every time I try to think, like, who haven't I used yet? Who haven't I? It's about to start getting really obscure, I think, at some right. point.
The Bawana Beast of wrestling commentary. Bobito! Yeah.
Yeah, it was an interesting show all around. I think overall, my just opinion, it seemed like it was fun. There's nothing negative about the show. I don't think this was the episode that necessarily popped off the charts, so to speak, but lots of fun stuff. Overall, what did you think of this episode?
Yeah, you know, in these shows, we love wrestling, the wrestling arts and sciences, I like to call it. But, you know, lots going on in the world. It's Wednesday, January 20th. Things happen in the morning. I'm sure you saw it on your local television channel of choice. So you can be forgiven if both shows and Wednesday Night Warp throw up solid, but not necessarily essential episodes. But that said, we did get some hard hitting action and some vignettes that push some storylines across, especially that whole one crossing that other whole network of promotion, which we'll get to in a second.
Yeah, something happened this morning. I was in the dark completely. I don't know anything about it, but
I actually tried a new Oreo. They actually come in. It's a chocolate hazelnut. Basically, Nutella has an Oreo.
Oh my God! Don't say that. Yeah, I'm not. I'm not being felt much longer because I am definitely going to try about 7,000 of those. Speaking of 7,000, that's a number, and numbers are in relating to rankings, and that's what this show is all about. If you are new to this show, what we do is we take the wrestlers from this week's episode of AEW Dynamite, and we power rank them 1 through 10. Here is last week's rankings. If you're looking up on And I think Flobo just told me there was no sound coming from me. So that is a bit of a hiccup there. So basically what I said was we rank them 1 through 10. That was last week's show. If you're on audio only, I just went quiet for a second. But here I'm back. Basically, we rank them 1 through 10. We give a point value to each ranking you get each week. And that tallies up over the course of the year. But the rankings themselves today, we're just looking at today. So if you had a good week last week, it doesn't matter. What have you done for me lately, Flobo? That's what we're getting at, okay?
I've done nothing for you, ever. I don't know why you even asked me that question.
Okay, so what we're going to do is I'm going to start off just with the first time I've ever done this. It's an honorary spot because I feel like if I don't mention this, I'm going to be a jerk and everyone's going to hate me and everyone's going to give me a hard time and everyone's going to say I'm terrible. So we're going to give an honorary spot to -1, Brody Lee Jr. It was his birthday. He had some fun in the beginning. He got on the mic a little bit. It was a good time. And it was fun to see him just have a little time to shine. I think in a few years we might have a, if I dare say, dynamite wrestler on our hands.
You would say that because you love play on words, but I wouldn't. No, it was actually a pretty cool spot for the honorable mention of minus one. Look, if at that age and someone said you were going to be on national TV, I would be all about that. Heck, I'd be all about that now. So, yeah. What a cool time wearing the mask, throwing the kendo sticks. We all knew that was coming as far as swinging the hardwood. So, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, so shout out, honorary spot, negative one, Brody Lee Jr., you get that. Congratulations. I'm sure you're going to be on this list more often than not down the road. But let's get into the meat and potatoes. Let's get into the real part of the show. Let's get into what this show is all about, and that is ranking the number one wrestler first, and we're going to go back to number 10. There's already controversy at number one, Flobo. It's our second week ever doing this. We've already got controversy. See, what I typically do is when I have tag teams, I rank them together as one. So Lucha Brothers, they count as one. Good Brothers, they count as one. Proud and Powerful, they count as one. But I'm already breaking the rule. It's day two. It's list two, and I'm on the first person. And the number one elite of the week this week goes to none other than MJF Maxwell Jacob Friedman, because he cut a great promo early on over Jericho, by the way, who was also there, but MJF was the one that chatted. He then went in and he talked and he big upped the Inner Circle, tried to make amends with them before the match. And then in the match, not only did he come out on top, but he did it in the smartest way possible by doing the least amount possible. And he still got the big win. I have to put him at number one here. Big win, main event spot. Do you think that's fair?
On an episode with so many people giving him B+ and A- performances, it was an unenviable position for you, Jack. I couldn't tell you who'd be number one. But I think if you had to choose one, MJF is it. You know, look, did that Dynamite ring still have something? It was still using the match today. Giving it some story-beaten value. He's an excellent seller, excellent emoter. Kind of gave me old Ric Flair vibes in the ring today. If I had to pick someone and you picked MJF, I couldn't disagree with you.
A lot of people will tell you that Chris Jericho is one of the best of all time. And I think you've got a good point if you say that. You may agree or may not agree, but I think it's fair to say you could argue the point that he's in the conversation in that top 10 list, right? Saying that, one of the reasons why I think MJF really bumped up to the top wasn't even just the fact that he won, but like I said, he was in front of a microphone with Chris Jericho standing right next to him, and MJF did the bulk of the talking. Now, it's not like he was standing next to Wardlow doing the bulk of the talking. He was in there with one of the best on the microphone, and he was the one doing the talking. And again, later on, he went in and he talked to the Inner Circle. It wasn't Jericho that went in and talked to them and helped rally the troops. It was MJF that did it. And one of the biggest theme songs in wrestling right now, Judas, was modified so that MJF's theme could still be a part of it. It's one thing to merge two people who are on equal planes, but MJF literally put himself shoulder to shoulder with one of the best of all time. Is this hyperbole? Am I going too far with this? Is it like, Jack, it's just whatever. You're reading too much into it. Or is MJF literally putting himself on the same stage as a Chris Jericho?
Well, you are the worst kind of right. You are technically right. See, MJF and Jericho are very, very similar in the way they approach their characters. They live the gimmick, baby. And yes, I may have poo-pooed and frowned at a dinner debonair on last season's episode of Elite the Week, but there's no doubt in my mind when it comes to antagonistic characters on that brand, those two are top. Look, Kenny Omega, it just came to the party. He has his own thing. We'll talk about that later, I am sure. But you think about the kind of portrayals we have you're supposed to boo, it's MJF and Jericho. Their alliance is there. I don't know how long. Imagine this. You have someone who is so evil, so heelish, that they're in this group of heels, and MJF is still the heel of heels, king of kings. So yes, I'll give it to you. Same status as Jericho, and MJF has, what 15 years? 20 years on Jericho?
Yeah, it's something that, because he also took the spot of the tag team within the Inner Circle, and that's why I say there's already controversy, because I should technically be ranking MJF and Jericho together, but I felt like MJF stood up above this, and I think at this point we would still look at them as individual stars. Am I being fair and still ranking them separately, or should I say no? The rule is they're a team, they should be ranked together.
What are rules, bro? No, I think that after this week, you kind of have to rank them together if they're going to be a legit or bona fide tag team. But even if, like, today, if Hager and Sammy won, I think we would call them a unit because they were a unit, right? And so, but with MJF and Jericho, it does have this weird super group feel to it. So yes, moving on, I think you would consider them a tag team, but this time I would say individuals being thrown together.
So I would like to know, everyone in the chat, if you think at this point we should be saying that they are a team, or are they still ranked separately? Because I would rank people like the two-man power trip back in the day, Stone Cold and Triple H. Even though they were a team, I'd still think of them as separate. Even Rock and Sock Connection, to a degree, I would consider as two separate stars just coming together for the time being. But maybe I'm wrong. Let me know in the chat. And while you're doing that, let me say thank you to everyone who's joining us live on YouTube and Twitch, or listening to us later on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You're all so very much appreciated. Heywood and Monge, thanks so much for joining us. While you're here, if you could do a huge favor, hit the like button, leave a little comment, subscribe, share it with your friends. All that goes a long way to helping the show grow. And the more the show grows, the more we can do with the show. So I definitely appreciate any time you guys do that. But it's time to move on to the next thing. And to the point of, are they a team or are they not a team? I think number two, in that same match, I've got to give it to Sammy Guevara. He killed it in this match, in the main event. Sammy Guevara was doing moves all over the place. He stood on his own. When MJF even came to the back and tried to be chummy with him, Sammy Guevara never backed down. He touched the ceiling, I think, when he hit that Swanton bomb off the top. He was flip-flying everywhere. He took on everyone in the match at one point, where he was hitting everyone with his finisher all at the same time. He really came out like a star, and he looked today like someone who, if he was to leave the Inner Circle, would be just fine.
And if he does that, he'd be ranked separately, but I do think he's a tag team with Hager. They gave him a brand name. They flew in a video from Sammy Hager, and they cut him off kind of weirdly and awkwardly. They were the team going in. They were promoted as a bona fide team. This should not count on the rank. Sammy Guevara is a fantastic performer. He showed it tonight, but you got to bundle it with Jake.
But they lost, so they're not a team.
Well, I mean, now they're not, but as of today, I would.
Come on, they wouldn't have been Sammy Hager. We're not going to keep that.
There's a hashtag, man. Hashtags mean everything.
I think it's a fun little joke, but it's also referencing a rocker from like 30 years ago. Come on, let's. But I think the main point of this is I just thought Sammy Guevara came off looking amazing, and he really looked like he stood on his own. He always felt like he was kind of the young star of a stable, where now it definitely felt like if him and Hager were to break off, they would be a dangerous team together. If he was to go off on his own, he would be dangerous together. You talk about the team that was set up for this win or this match. Proud and Powerful are the ones that took a hard loss tonight for not getting the win tonight. But I feel like even in taking a loss, Sammy Guevara, you know, they always say it's not necessarily who wins, it's who looks good in the end. And I think after this match, we'll forget who won and who lost, but I think we'll look back on this match as the Sammy Guevara match more than even the Chris Jericho match.
I possibly would agree with you. If we hadn't walked down this road half a dozen times in Sammy Guevara's career, night one of Dynamite, who did Cody Rhodes beat? All right, we're talking about that Super Bowl scramble. Who lost that match? Come on, man. Sammy Guevara has taken L's his entire career. And yes, these matches were great. We think of them as milestones, but he's always on the losing end of that. Look, to what you said a minute ago, if Jake Hager and Sammy break off, I would say Sammy has a lot more potential. I think Jake is pretty much in the end of his career. That's right. I said it. Clip it out. Tag him. But when you think about Sammy Guevara, you can't give him all that praise yet if he hasn't got wins in strategic parts of his career. I'm sorry.
As an individual, who stood out the most in this match?
As an individual, I get MJF. He's number one in this ranking.
I hate you. You're the worst kind of right, Flobo. You're technically right. You're using my own ranking system against me.
It's
and I don't like it when you do that. You're not allowed to do that. That's part of the show.
Right. I didn't know.
But if you missed it, go back and check out that Swanton Bomb. He got such height on that thing. It was insane. Let's go to number three, shall we? Shall we move on to number three? This one's an interesting one. I'm going to give it to the Hangman Adam Page because it felt like this match in the beginning really kicked off once Adam Page came in. He cleared house when he arrived. He worked like he was a part of the Dark Order for a year with the chemistry he had with everyone. As JR said himself, that he seemed to have a new drive going into this, a new energy. And I may be sounding like John Silver talking about how great he is because I think he's so amazing. But I also think that the fact that he still chose to stand on his own, even though it would be very easy to go to the Dark Order, to stay true to himself and be like, look, I've tried being a part of a team. It didn't work out. It wasn't great. Just like anyone who goes through a big breakup, I got to spend some time on my own, figure out who I am, all that good stuff. I thought this was a really big move for him, and I think it really makes him stand out as that lone gunslinger type of character he is. I thought this was a huge move. I think everyone thought he was going to join the Dark Order. Everyone thought that was what's going to happen, but he zigged us when we thought he was going to zag. I thought this was a big move, a big win, and a big day for the Hangman.
We talk about John Silver. I think you praise him so much. I'm about to wonder if you're on your knees right now. please, Adam, come back to the Dark Order. Look, the Dark Order was great. We all love them. The fact that, as you could tell by next week's preview, they seem pretty much firmly in their protagonist camp. But they're missing a little bit of direction. I don't think that Adam Page would have worked in whatever this new direction is. Had Brody been alive still, rest in peace, God rest his soul, that might be a fun dynamic. But I think the writing was on the wall that this does not work if all these guys are fun-loving. Because it looks like Adam would totally hang out with these guys and drink a couple beers with them. So you got to keep things to tension. The will they or won't they? Now, my only gripe of this whole segment was that it should have been the Hour 1 main event. It should have been built up like, we're finally going to get a decision coming up. I had forgotten that this was the week he was going to give an answer until it was like, oh yeah, we're doing this. And even though it was pretty funny, everyone just assumed he was going to say yes. And it wasn't the case. I think it's ultimately for the best that cowboy dudes do cowboy-ish with his buttless chaps.
Did you see the shirtless cowboys dancing out?
Yeah, get out of here!
That was such a great moment. So you think it was the right call for him to stay solo and not join the Dark Order?
Yeah, that theme music, man, you can't change that.
I don't know. I think in the long term it's good because I like the lone gunslinger kind of thing. But I could have seen them being his sort of his posse. You know, every gang, outlaw gang, Robin trains, has the group together. I could see that. You know, if you play Red Dead Redemption, you've seen that you have your little Dutch and his little group. I could see him being the Dutch of the group, leading the gang, Robin trains.
True, but here's a question. What does the Dark Order mean now? I know it's a very somber question given what happened to Brody Lee, but until you answer that question, I won't know who's in and who's out, really.
So if you're Paige right now, do you want to see him just say, cool, I'm done with this, I'm moving on to the next part of my career? Or do you still want to see him fraternize with them? Do you want to see him maybe take him on as they get angry at him for not joining?
I think the way it was done now, there has to be some room for closure, whether or not it's another promo or like he saves the day in the Dark Order and gives him the final stare down right off of the sunset. I don't think it's over that way, but ultimately, yes, because this thing was drawn out for weeks and then the Dark Order complexion is a different group. The group itself had to change. It would be kind of odd now if he joins this Dark Order before. Right? I don't know. I think Dark Order has to figure out their own house in order, figure out who is their new Exalted One, if they're still even doing that before trying to add new personnel.
Well, I like them both. I like Dark Order. I like Hangman. And I think that both are set up for success if they want to. Both have the wild green yonder ahead of them, whatever pastures they want to graze on, I think is going to be great for them. It'll be very interesting. Next week, I think, is going to open up a lot of doors for this whole situation.
I agree. The wild green yonder. It's the blue yonder, green pastures. You just, okay.
So now it's time for the first segment of the show. It's time for the best dressed. If you follow us on Twitter, you know we call it the best dressed because we're skirting some legal issues regarding closets and whatnot, and what we're calling it. I'm just joking. We're all good fun. It's all good fun. But yeah, it's the best dressed of the night. This was a tough one, Flobo. There was actually a lot of really good dressed people tonight. A lot of people I was looking at that I thought I like, whether it's because I liked their hair, whether it's because I like the outfit. But at the end of the day, I think it would be impossible to give best dress to anyone other than Kenny Omega.
No.
With that shirt.
No.
With those pants, with those ridiculous shoes. And even if we're just going to look for a tiebreaker, the way he looked in that painting with just the jeans on, yeah, he was great. He looked amazing. I mean, those pants and those shoes that he could even use as a weapon, it was fantastic. I thought Kenny Omega looked like $1,000,001 best dressed of the night.
How dare you? How dare you? Someone who has such a chiseled jaw and someone in tune with fashion have the nerve, the gall, the audacity to say Kenny Omega looked like $1,000,001. Yes, maybe he did, minus the million. That guy looked like he fell into a closet and grabbed a shirt and pants that didn't even match. Pinstripes with paisley, a brown leather boots with studs on them, and this is supposed to be the pinnacle, the paragon of fashion. Penelope Ford was $1,000,000. She looked the part. Her tights matched, and she wasn't even considered, but yet somehow Penelope Ford's old color scheme got thrown on the chest of Kenny Omega next to a painting, and I'm supposed to believe that this guy's the best dressed? This is a sham! A sham!
How dare you assume that I didn't consider Penelope Ford? Because she did get considered, by the way. She was definitely up there. And I, like Haywood Wong suggests, even Charles Taylor was in the running.
He should have won. He wore a tuxedo.
There was a number of people. But look, I like people who take risks. I mean, I thought a lot of people had a lot of good outfits tonight. But at the end of the day, I think the confidence, the raw confidence that Kenny Omega had, I think any individual piece of clothing he had on tonight would make him a winner of this award. Even if it was just a regular, if he was wearing torn sweatpants and flip-flops with that shirt, I'd be like, that shirt wins. If he was wearing a dirty tank top with those pants, he'd win. If he was wearing swim trunks and those shoes, he would win. I wanted to give it to someone else. I actually really wanted to give it to Penelope Ford. I love Penelope Ford's hair tonight, but it was just overwhelming. His outfit was overwhelming.
That's the operative word, was over. Honey, boo boo, not matching is not fashion. Oh my goodness. I feel offended. I can't believe you actually compared. He looked like a creator character from the No Mercy days. You're telling me that's the best dress? I will not read your lookbook anymore, Jack Farmer. I won't.
First off, he was not boxy enough to look like a creative character from the No Mercy days.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I thought they were great. I thought he had a good night overall as well. I don't think he quite makes it into consideration. But I like that he messed around with the Young Bucks even more. And I like that he was a part of a little beatdown later in the night. I think he had a good night. But at the end of the day, tonight, it's best dressed for me. That means he gets that means he gets one extra point added to his total. Just for anyone keeping track, you get a point for being the best dressed. Kenny Omega, you're the best dressed. I believe in you, buddy. So you get the points. Flobo doesn't get to decide. I do.
Who throws a shoe? Honestly.
Speaking of someone who might throw a shoe, is John Moxley at number four. John Moxley comes in, and I mean, he took a rough beating tonight, but he came out ahead. He got the win, and even though he's known as being this hardcore, destructive force of nature kind of guy, he got a solid win with a reversal into a nice little chokehold. But more than that, he cut a really great promo saying that he doesn't care whether it's Bullet Club or the Elite or whatever frat boys that he's hanging out with. I thought that was a fun little jab. He's going to beat up everybody. And I think that this is just another day of John Moxley asserting his dominance. Now, it wasn't against a ranked competitor, so he's not going to be that. It didn't bump him up to number one. But this was a great showing, and it was a great, tough, gutsy win for him.
Now more than ever, and I know people have told me in the DMs on Twitter, affable voice, by the way, that I'm just too harsh on Kenny Omega, but I can tell you one thing. Jon Moxley still walks around looking like an uncrowned champion. Still looks the part. Still feels the part. I feel like he's naked without that championship. Yes, Kenny Omega's a guy on top, but Jon Moxley has proven, even to me, among other people, because I didn't think much of him when he was a former WWE heavyweight champion, that he has done so much for that brand and that profile. And even a match we all thought he was going to win, and he did deliver the goods, really put the fact that he's bona fide on what he does. That guy needs a rematch, and fast, Jack Farmer.
I agree. I think that he comes across as such a tough and dangerous person in that ring. There's very few people that I think would match up with him and make me feel like he's not going to beat him. The line that really bumped him up for me, the thing that made me really think that this was a promo that made him get into this top five position, is when he said, "All roads lead through me," because that's how it feels in pro wrestling right now. Outside of the guys up in New York, if you want to be a top guy, you got to go through Jon Moxley. John's the guy. And I mean, he may look naked without that title, but he's got some chest hair coming in that I think is starting to make him look a little bit more rough and tumble as well. If that's, I almost made him best dressed for the chest hair.
That's kind of cool. I will give you that.
I almost want to have a running Hangman always best dressed, by the way, for the buttless chaps.
You should.
So I can always get that in.
Paisley and Stripes, your best dress today. Unbelievable.
I just can't do it when he wears a brown belt and black tights. It's just such a it's just a rule you don't break. But
Omega wore brown shoes with a black pants, and that's fine.
But yeah, it's great. He looked amazing.
Fine.
Flobo, it's fashion is temporary, style's forever. One day you'll get that.
Yes, neither, poor guy. Someone tell him something.
It does feel like Jon Moxley is so much more than just a former competitor, just a tough guy. And even when you know there's something special about someone, when they have a match with someone who's unranked and it still feels like must-see TV and can take a beating the way he did and can still feel like he's a legit threat, he's the person that I think we want to see roll up on Impact. He's the person that we want to see do different things and move beyond, I don't know. I don't know what's next for him. It feels like if it's not in the world title picture, it's beneath him, though.
That's true. He's kind of put in that corner because how special he is. And I think AEW is in the best job of just making him more like a mini attraction, having him show up every once in a while, throw the promos in the back, and have him feature in other companies. But sooner or later, you're going to have to give him something. I don't know if it's going to be the age-old young upstart heel and that's trying to push and poke the dragon. He gets snuffed out, or a tournament, or a rematch, but you're going to have to give him something. But that, you have another about a month or two before that becomes an issue.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that 100%. He is actually one of the only people he is the only person that's a former champion that kind of maintained that top level positioning even after losing it, which brings me to the only other person who has been the world champion, and that's Chris Jericho. I'm putting it number five. Chris Jericho, look, he's the leader of the Inner Circle. He won the main event. He did most of the work in the main event as far as the match goes for his team to get the win. But he's not as high up because it, to me, it felt like he got outshined by MJF throughout the match and throughout the show. And it felt like he was being surpassed by his own person. I think that fifth is a good spot for him. It's a great spot to be on these rankings. I feel like typically he'd be higher, though. I want to put him higher. I want to put him higher, but I also feel like it's unfair to put him above anyone else mentioned so far.
Okay, sure. I know in our previous iteration, Jericho was always number one. It was almost a lock in there. And I was like, oh, man, what's going on? But, hey, look, I would probably put him a little lower in the list. I think Jericho is running a 7 or 8. He's kind of, which is kind of weird. He's resting on his laurels, but not so much the laurels of everything. Pretty spent the last 6 months. I think after that Mimosa Mayhem match, it was just kind of there. He's kind of been around. He comes out and cuts up a promo every once in a while. He tends to be the second person in the feud, or he's with someone else. He's kind of hiding behind tag team competition. So straight the competition will always be his detriment. And yes, he got the win. So I understand of him being on the list. But five? A little generous.
I mean, I agree. I think there's a part of me that wants to rank him a little bit lower, but I think when you're tethered to the person who's number one, it helps you bump up a little bit. I think if he was teamed with, let's say he was teamed with Hager instead, then I think, I don't know if he'd be on the list at all. So that's what it's just a weird, and that's why I talk about the controversy in this spot. This is a tough spot for me to put him in. I love Jericho, and it still feels like he's such a vital part of the show, which I think helps, but it definitely feels like ever since he came out on the short end of the stick against Orange Cassidy, he's really been struggling to maintain that top level position. And it feels like it's been so long since he was a guy that you would think could be the world champion. I can't imagine him hanging with a Moxley and an Omega at this point.
Yeah, I think those days are pretty much done. And I think it takes a lot of maturity on Jericho's end to understand what his role in the company is. He still has a lot to give. And, you know, we, meaning the internet wrestling community, has jokes for days about Jericho's speed or his crispness of his moves or even his physique. But he's still a name and he still can contribute to a card. But he has to do something quick for himself. He can't be hiding behind his tag team partners or just inserting himself in storylines for too long before we all start to see through that and go, what is he really doing?
Right. And look, let's call it what it is. I mean, fifth on the rankings is still a great ranking. But again, there was a time when Jericho was number one every single week for a long time. So this feels like a falling down the rankings a bit. It's a bit like when you're the Patriots and then you don't make the playoffs. You can be a good team, but like, oh, you didn't make the playoffs. You really fell off. So it's just an interesting thing. It'll be interesting to see if he can somehow maneuver himself back into that number one spot. But right now, it feels like it's because he's tethered himself onto an unstoppable MJF. As we look at people who have tethered themselves on to being unstoppable, number six, Private Party, coming out, new tights, new colors, officially the number one tag team contenders. But the reason they're ranked at number six isn't just because they got some new tights. It's not even because they were on Impact Wrestling. It's because they turned to the dark side, Flobo. They've embraced evil. They used the chair to get a win over Top Flight and Matt Sydal. They finally did what needed to be done to stand out and change their fortune. They had a few good months where they were beating lots of people, even the Young Bucks, and then they started to slip. They started to fall. They started to disappear. But no more. Under the tutelage of Matt Hardy, they're doing whatever it takes to win, even giving up 30%. Flobo, Private Party, back on the rankings at number six, is using the chair and doing whatever it takes to win enough to warrant this position.
Hey, man, cheat to win, baby, until you get caught. But some could argue, me. It's a little too late for these guys. Private Party, when this brand started, had all the potential in the world. Sky was the limit. We thought they were going to be uncrowned tag team champions. And for whatever reason, whether they got the right opportunities or the right with the competition, they've always come up short. They put their hearts out there, but they were always in the losing end. And now, Matt Hardy, someone who signed and realized that he couldn't be woken nor broken, is with Private Party. Hardy Party is what we call it. When Hardy Party is what we love. We love the fact the mix of youth and experience. We love the fact of technical wrestling and high-flying stuff. It's all a great unit. But something tells me that this turns to their dark side. Reeks of desperation. Maybe they see the competition writing on the wall, and maybe they see their spot at the table getting smaller week by week as their opportunities dry up, and so they had to do what they have to do. So I commend them for taking the initiative in their own hands, but I have to ask you, Jack, is this a short-term solution that's not even a solution at all?
A short-term solution is much better than no solution. If they didn't do what they needed to do, if they didn't use that chair, they would have lost, and it'd probably be Top Flight in this spot right here. That's but the cool fact that they did that shows me that they're not going easily. And will they stay at number six? Will they move up? Will they move down? I don't know. But today, they show me that they're not going quietly into the night, that they are going to stand and fight for their spot. I don't know if they can hang with the Young Bucks again. I don't know if they can continue to be there. But ever since Private Party teamed up with Matt Hardy, they've been more interesting. They've done more things, and they even tuned into Impact. Let me ask you this. Are they enough to get you to tune into Impact, Private Party?
No.
What would they need to do to become more interesting for you?
That's a hard question. I don't know how to answer this question honestly without turning heel. But in the context of the show is get some more wins. Yes, get more wins. That's what I meant.
Do you think sorry, I threw that one at you. So looking at this and looking at the Impact stuff that's going on, as of now, from what I can tell, for the most part, outside of a few things with the Good Brothers, it kind of feels a little bit like it's just sort of talent exchange more so than an invasion at this point. Do you think that they need to make this a little more personal than just talent exchange? Or do you think, hey, this is great. You can get a few extra tag teams. Maybe they'll borrow some female wrestlers on Impact, and maybe, you know, AEW will borrow some female wrestlers. Maybe Impact will borrow some individual stars. Maybe they'll just – do you think that's fine, or should they up the ante a little bit?
Yeah, I agree. Ante has to be raised, and that window is closing. Because from an outside cynical person's point of view, this whole thing looks like a very cynical thing to get Kenny Omega and Don Callis bona fide, which is kind of two things. It shows that Impact is not worthy enough to have these storylines happen on the brand, and also shows you're not really confident Kenny Omega as a heel champion because he needs the extra help in all this paradigm shifting, no pun intended, stuff. You have to either give me your full invasion and we know who the battle lines are drawn, because Kenny Omega's a heel, so he's the aggressor. Does that mean Impact Wrestling are the good guys? No, because the Good Brothers are rolling with Omega. Well, then who's going to fight them? An internal conflict with the Young Bucks? It's already getting messy. So you got to give me what the battle lines are and why that matters. That first night, when Tony Khan was with Tony Schiavone, saying, I might buy this company. I go, okay, AEW is going to be the fall guy for this one. Help out the young scrappy app underdog. Get the money. Hit the bank. It's all well and good. But now we're seeing it break down. So, yeah, right now it's a talent exchange, and that's going to lose luster pretty fast because most people don't know the characters and Impact. I have to explain what a Crazy Steve is. So you're not going to get that return on investment on Wednesday nights.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think it's done a lot for Kenny Omega. I would argue that it's been good for him. It makes him seem like a bigger deal, and it gives him something different that no other world champion has had, at least in a long time. But I don't know if it's enough to make me say I'm going to tune into a wrestling show I've never watched before, just to see, you know, Private Party over there, or just to see other characters from a show I do watch being on there. Because I think to myself, I can see Private Party on Dynamite. Why would I watch them on Impact? And if I don't know who the wrestlers are on Impact, I don't know if I'm super excited to see them on AEW Dynamite. I mean, you know, it might be cool. You know, I know who some of the wrestlers are on Impact, but like, you know, Eddie Edwards, if he showed up, I would just go, oh, okay. Eddie Edwards, great. Without any more connection to it. Because when I heard Private Party was on Impact, I was like, oh, that's cool. I mean, I don't know. It didn't pull me over there, I guess, is what I'm saying.
We go back to invasions of years past, and whether or not you consider them invasions is up to you, but the ECW invasion, WCW one, the ECW WWE ones, there's really a couple categories. You give me the attraction, the suplex machine, or the Mike Awesome showing up. Oh my gosh, you're doing it. Or you give me the personnel. What's this president doing here? What's he going to buy? Who's he here to see? Or you give me the tag team that's so athletic, the moves sell themselves. They don't have to say much. So if I'm being fair and honest with you about Private Party, is that they're neither. They're not an attraction. They're not of a large size. There's people on that brand right now that are doing what they're doing better. There, I said it. So if they move the Impact, there's no need for them to draw that. You can say Matt Hardy. Sure, I want to see Matt Hardy, but the Matt Hardy we all know from Impact, Brooklyn, was 2 years ago, at least, if not 5 years ago, at peak. So, though, those guys will not work on Impact. And that's what I'm saying. Like, they got to figure that out now, or it's going to be one of those things like a footnote. Like, oh, yeah, remember that thing they did once?
Right. Yeah, I agree. I'd like to see some more. I think there will be. I think they're building up to something, but I do think kind of along the lines of Sting, which we won't touch on too much today. I like long-form storytelling, but every now and again, you got to give me something. You got to give me a little bit more. You got to do more than just say, okay, this is going to take 6 months for us to pan this all out. I need a little more sizzle sometimes. That said, someone who didn't have any sizzle today. It's time for the dud of the week, Flobo. Unfortunately, someone gets last place. And when you get last place, you get deducted a point. And unfortunately, this week, the dud of the week goes to Chaos Project. I'm sorry, Luther. I thought it was fun to see, but when you get your face slammed into a birthday cake, it is very hard to not call yourself the dud of the week. He put up a good fight. He tried his best, but at the end of the day, you get put through a cake. I can't not put you on dud of the week.
He sold that cake like he was busted open. It was almost like in Jumanji, Kevin Hart's character, like, oh, cake, I can't. But,
I mean, I felt bad. Honestly, as soon as the show started and he came out, I was thinking, he's going through that cake. You knew it. You knew it. You knew right away he's going through the cake, or that cake's ending up on his face at some point. It was entertaining. I'm not saying it wasn't a fun time. I'm just saying, if you go through cake, you can't – not only are you not going to be on the power rankings, but you're probably going to be at the tail end of it.
True story.
Just barely getting past Chuck Taylor again for this one, because he had a rough night as well. But he got a pass because it's kind of part of what's going on. So it's a little bit like, I mean, I'm not going to put him there every single week. That's kind of the whole thing. But
negative points, racking up.
Yeah, I got to give it to Luther. In the chat, let me know if you guys think that it's fair that Luther and Chaos Project, they're a team, gets the dud of the week. It's a hard one to give, because I feel bad. Everyone works so hard, but someone's got to be the last place, right?
True story.
Speaking of last place, a couple of guys who I think for a long time were last place, but just they've been coming into their own and doing so well. At number 7, John Silver and Alex Reynolds. They had a fun match. John Silver in particular, man, he is just having a coming out party on the microphone. So much fun, so much energy. His speed in the ring and the way he just bounces around is always fun to watch. I think he's got some good things coming his way with this whole Dark Order thing, and I think he's even starting to stand out amongst the Dark Order themselves, not just the people with the numbers like 5 and 10, but he's starting to stand out even beyond the people like Evil Uno and Colt Cabana and other people who are big-time characters in that stable. So they are a hard tag team, so they're going in together, even though John Silver seems to be the guy doing a lot of the heavy lifting as far as the character development stuff goes. But John Silver, Alex Reynolds, man, I didn't think that they were going to be as successful and good as they are, but here they are at number 7.
7 is a solid spot for them. Not much to write home about. It was funny you said bouncing off the ropes, because he reminds me of Ricochet. Not the wrestler Ricochet, the cartoon Ricochet from Mucha Lucha, because he would bounce off the rings the way he did. John Silver is a star in the most weirdest way, because even though he's ripped and shredded, he wouldn't be considered anyone's first choice as a professional wrestler. But hey, he entertains, and I was sports entertained. It was pretty much all the numbers there. Why not? Give him 7th place.
Yeah, I thought he was great. I think they did an amazing job. I'm happy for them, and it's good for them being there. I think they've got some good stuff going for them. At number 8, Flobo, Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes comes out, and he won his match. This is another one I feel like I'd put him higher, but unfortunately, he was up against an unranked opponent. Well, maybe not unranked. Peter Avalon. He's had wins on AEW Dark, and of course is SoCal here in Los Angeles. He's got some history here as well. But I think it's fair to say that Cody Rhodes, this wasn't his toughest opponent, but it felt like it was one of his toughest opponents watching him have this match. And he almost lost just because Jade Cargill showed up. Another person with best dressed of the week potential. But I just thought that I thought, if anything, Peter Avalon came off looking like the star of this match in a lot of ways. But Cody Rhodes got the win, so he gets the ranking.
Yeah, which was the point. You know, Peter Avalon did a lot. It was one of the first signees at AEW. Was a librarian for a very, very long time, going back to his PP all day, pretty Peter Avalon persona. And then, you're right, Cody Rhodes did the thing. But he should get preemptive minus points for dealing with Shaq next week. But that's neither here nor there. Good odds of Cody Rhodes this week, for sure.
Yeah, my favorite part of the match was, of course, the ending when Peter Avalon tapped out instead of getting hit in the face. I loved it because I could appreciate that. I'd probably be the same way.
You would have gone to the ring, actually.
I would have tapped out backstage.
Cody Rhodes.
He'd walk out to the ring, like, wait, I'm supposed to come out second. They're like, yeah, sorry, sir. Jack already quit.
He tapped out.
Actually, Cody would probably know I tapped out, but like, no, man, we got that pyro ready. I'm getting my hands.
Going out there.
He's got great entrance music, by the way, that we've kind of fallen off on for that. Moving on, I think that's kind of enough to say about Cody Rhodes, but shout out Peter Avalon. Great work from him. Going on to number 9, already mentioned it earlier, loved her hair, loved the outfit. Penelope Ford, I think, got a really strong win. I think she looks great. I think her opponent, Layla Hirsch, is amazing and has a future ahead of her. The only reason I don't rank Penelope Ford higher is she's so inconsistently on shows. I don't know if this is going to – where this is going to go for her. But I thought she looked amazing. I thought her outfit looked cool. Her hair looked cool. Her music is cool. She has everything to be cool. I want to see more of her.
Yeah, so for those of you who don't know, these power rankings, you get points, and they're in descending order. So at 9th place, Penelope Ford gets 2 points. But she could have 3 for being best dressed. But Jack Farmer said no, because he gave it to my man Uncle Kenny in his mismatched closet. Okay, anyway, point being, she's great. She's money. Yeah. You're right. Her appearances are pretty much her detriment. Her opponent was Layla Hirsch. I think one of the more I have more so conflicted feelings about Layla Hirsch on that roster right now. But I do think that Penny went out there and showed out. I think 9th is okay. I would have ranked her a tad higher and gave her best dress myself. And hopefully she gets to get more points as the months goes on, because you're being really stingy with them right now.
So by the way, like, legitimately, it was between her and Kenny Omega for best dressed. Like, legit. Like, I thought she... Because it's a new look for her. I thought it was cool. I also feel kind of weird that we keep talking about the female wrestler on the list as the best, like, how she appeared. I think that's – we should be talking about wrestling.
Sir.
I thought she wrestles really well, too. Again, I want to rank her higher. Just the problem is her opponent – just like last week with Serena Deeb, her opponent is unranked. And this is kind of a problem, I think, with the AEW women's division is – it's so spotty when we see these wrestlers. We may not see her wrestle again for another month. Preemptively, that's one of the reasons why now 2 weeks in a row, when I rank one of the women's matches, they're typically low, because no one from last week who wrestled a match in the women's division was on this week. The week before, it was Abaddon and Sheeta. Neither of them have been on in 2 weeks. And it becomes difficult to think that this – really deserves a high power ranking when I may not see them for another month.
I think it's a problem over time, but you can't deny the fact she contributed tonight in a way that was befitting of an 8th or maybe even a 7th of this list.
Look, it's close. I mean, 9th is still a good spot. By the way, there's like 25 people on each episode. So that's something to keep in mind, by the way. I mean, even in this match, there was Layla Hirsch that was involved. There was Miro. There was Kip Sabin. And there was... Orange Cassidy, there was Chuck Taylor, lots of pieces moving on. So 9th is actually a pretty solid spot. It's just a little, it seems weird because I don't rank the whole, I actually do rank the whole thing. Maybe a Patreon coming up where I show you where the other people land. But for now, I think she's an unheralded star of the women's division. I think she needs more time. I think she's someone that if you put the belt on her and you showed that on a poster, people would say, I'm interested in that women's division. I have high, high expectations for her, and I think she's going to have a huge, huge upside. In fact, I would put her in the farmer's market if she wasn't already such a big part of Dynamite. I feel like that'd be cheating. She's already on the show. You know what I mean?
And speaking of farmer's market?
Well, that's – we got one more.
Okay. I was like, 10. Oh, that would be a perfect transition if it worked. Okay.
It would have been a perfect transition, but I'm the only one that does transitions. Fair Speaking enough. Of transitions, we're going to go to number 10.
Off the rails.
That was the worst. That was the worst. Okay. Transitions.
How meta.
At number 10, I'm giving it to the Jungle Express. Specifically, I want to give it to Jack Perry because he stepped in. Jurassic. I always say Jungle Express. Because Jungle Boy.
I always call Top Flight High Risk. No, it's a
Anyway, Jurassic Express, Jungle Boy, Jack Perry. He really stepped up and going after FTR and challenging them. But it wasn't just the fact that he challenged them. He messed them up. He confused them. He got them out of their own game plan. He got them into singles matches. Usually they're the ones that are pulling the strings. Usually they're the ones controlling their destiny. But he went in there. He got them all riled up, got them into a match that was out of their comfort zone for next week. And I think that shows that he is messing with them in their mind games. I think Jack Perry just has a huge upside this year as well. I mean, he's got big things coming for him, and I think this is where it starts. So I think the fact that he took control of his destiny, he went out there, he picked a fight with somebody, that's something we haven't seen much from him before. So I think this is a huge step for him. But I rank them as a team because that's how they rank themselves. So I give it to Jurassic Express.
I have to agree with you. I'm so glad you picked up on that. Look, AEW has their bona fide stars. Chris Jericho is known. People know him. I mean, in fact, the whole crowd from the NBA playoffs or NBA preseason saw him earlier this year. You got guys like Jon Moxley, who's a walking champion. But you're going to come up with characters that are going to appeal to a younger demographic. Even though you are a TV-14 product, the ones that do the appearances, the Nickelodeon Choice Awards, you can't put Moxley there. That would be weird. Jack Perry can be that guy, and why not? So, yes, get him on TV, get him more wins, and have him do more award shows.
I want to see Jon Moxley and SpongeBob standing together. But yeah, I mean, everyone likes Jack Perry. I think he's got big things to come, but I do think the new entrance music for him is a sign of big things to come. I think the fact that he is flummoxing FTR is a big sign of big things. By the way, Tully Blanchard with that red jacket, he was also a contender for best dress of the night.
Solid choice.
Like I said, this was a tough night for best dress. There's a lot of good ones, but yeah, I think Jungle Boy specifically, but they get ranked as a team, the Jurassic Express, they're at number 10. Let's bring the show home. It's time for Farmer's Market. Farmer's Market, Farmer's Market. It's where Jack treats people like stocks. So basically what the Farmer's Market is, if you're new to the show, I pick someone from AEW Dark and I say if they were a stock, you should buy them because maybe they didn't have a lot of success on AEW Dynamite in the previous year, but the next year coming up, I think big things are coming for them. I watched AEW Dynamite or Dark last night. I picked someone and I already know it's good because he showed up on AEW Dynamite and I'm going with Nick Comoretto, the big, hairy, mean looking dude that is strong and reminds me of a bigger, meaner renegade from WCW, but he isn't tied to the Ultimate Warrior. Flobo, this guy's rocking bicep tassels and I like bicep tassels. He really put Scorpio Sky on Tuesday to the limit and then he shows up on Dynamite and takes it to the champ, Jon Moxley. He's also a student of Dustin Rhodes. This guy has everything. He's a beast of a man and I think if you could buy stock when it's low before it gets high, this is the guy to do it.
You know, there's millions of wrestling fans. I watch TV programming all week. We all like wrestling for different things. And I love the character work when it comes to professional wrestling. But Jack Farmer loves bicep tassels, buttless chaps, thighs, the most obscure part. You know what's a good pick? I won't let you live down Powerhouse Hobbs, though. So until this guy starts doing some kind of return on investment, I'll be like, I don't know if I trust your portfolio. But yeah, good choice. Solid attempt. I love the highlights from Dark, which I did see this week. So why not?
Powerhouse Hobbs, by the way, is still technically a good buy last year because he's still on AEW Dynamite. He's still doing some things, so that still counts. There's a lot of people that come through AEW Dark that never make it to Dynamite. I'll be honest. It's not like he's been Bitcoin over the past few months, but he's solid. He's performing. He's like an index fund that's going up by a steady margin, slowly.
He's on Team Taz. As a career is going to stall. There, hey, I said it.
Hey, but he's on TV, which is better than a lot of people. So
myself included.
Yes. Myself included. So that said, I think this guy, he has one of those looks, you know, that I think you already kind of get what he's about when you see him. He's a terrifying madman looking dude. Reminds me a lot of Huxley from UK, NXT UK, in that just big, hairy, mean dude kind of thing. But he stood in there with Jon Moxley. That's a testament to how tough he can be. So that's my Farmer's Market pick of the week. Track him. He gets a point for this week. But that, you know, I don't know. It's tricky. I don't know how many times people can be on Dynamite, and I can still pick them for Farmer's Market. This was his first AEW Dynamite run, as far as I can recall, so I think it still counts. But Layla Hirsch is probably up there, but she's been on like two or three episodes now, so I think I might have missed my chance to put her in this spot. But in any case, that's the show. We're done. We stay at our hour. Flobo, what'd you think of the show?
It was a solid show. It's January. Things, the whole world's watching C-SPAN today. Totally understand. This show was solid. It's not necessarily must-see TV, but if you did stick around, you had a good time.
I agree. I thought it was worth your time at the end of the day. And most of all, it was worth hanging out with you. I appreciate you being on, as always. But before we get out of here, let the world know where they can find you online.
Oh, you can find me in a bunch of places because I got a Discord. Flobo Boys on Discord. Just search it. It's public. Check it out there. I'm also on that Patreon, patreon.com/FloboBoys. And tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern, I rejoin with the Jack Farmer for Draped in Gold. We chat about both NXT brands, drapedingold.com.
Yep, we got Draped in Gold tomorrow. We also have the Everything Tournament tomorrow. Thursday's a busy day for us. We do the Everything Tournament. We are doing the biggest badasses in all of movies and TV and media and real life. We take all the biggest badasses we can think of, and we're battling it out until we find out who is the biggest badass. So check that out. We take your votes. So watch along. It's always really fun there. And yeah, as you mentioned, Draped in Gold, we're going to talk about the other side of the Wednesday Night Wars. That's always a treat as well. So make sure to be a part of that. And until next time, you know the rules. Do your best and be yourself.